Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know, at BBM Bumabrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service. You can have this able call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, wealthy migrant investors could give struggling universities a lifeline. We're going to catch up a yarn of Executive Chairman, Atlas Advisors Australia, Guy Headley. Got Guy on the line. Guy, very good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. I always say that money's not everything, but I rank it right up there with oxygen. So, like, it's a tool. And you're saying here wealthy migrant investors could give struggling universities a lifeline with the world we're living in at the moment, COVID-19 and struggling situation in all the industries. Please explain how the wealthy migrant investors could help universities in this country.
Sure. So typically, universities produce obviously some of the best and brightest in Australia. Mm-hmm. And often for PhD students and researchers and scientists coming out of universities, they're actually required to develop or come up with really, really great concepts to get their PhD and to get their research. Often, the universities will actually back that. So mm-hmm. universities will actually have almost like a venture capital arm that will invest in those researchers and those scientists and their great ideas. It benefits the university because it shows that it's actually committed to research and development for its top scientists. And it obviously creates huge business opportunities that can then grow within the region.
It sounds like a win-win situation, Guy, for both the university and if not the students, and plus the investors. And investors, I'm picking up people who have a passion for that particular concept or that industry as such, and they want to be a part of making that thing grow, yes?
Yeah, look, one of the little-known facts in venture capital in Australia is that the oldest venture capital firm in Australia is actually UniSeed, which is the universities themselves collaborating together to actually sponsor and support their research scientists. Now, we partner with UniSeed to support universities around raising capital and investing into those technologies and those great ideas that come out of research.
Well, everything starts with an idea, you know, doesn't it? And that's what we're talking about. And like I said, the money is the tool for the so-called investment. So it's a great platform as such.
Yeah, look, it is. And you know, again, there's some incredible technologies that come out of university. I mean, you know, Wi-Fi, for example. You know, Wi-Fi came through university research.
Okay.
And that was here in Australia.
And we all across the globe live with Wi-Fi.
Correct. And then you go down to sort of slightly more bespoke areas. Like, we've got one investment that we've partnered with UniSeed on, which is into a business called Wildlife Drones. That is a drone business that actually sends drones out into wild Australia to track animals. Now, there's a business that came out of research and science that needs support. Mm. And the problem at the moment you've got is that because of COVID, the universities are really struggling. They're struggling to get capital, and they're struggling to actually continue to back their scientists.
So the so-called UniSeed is working very diligently in this area, yes?
Yeah, it is. It is. And because of what's happened with COVID, because of what's happened to universities' inability now to kind of attract foreign students, their budgets are taking a big hit.
Yes.
And their core businesses are under pressure. And, of course, the great sort of support they've made for research and development gets reduced.
Well, with the unis in this country, we have a lot of international university students, don't we? And so, and because all the flights are down, it's closed off that income, so to speak.
Correct. And so we've sort of been working with the government around trying to give them ways that they can increase the investment coming into the country that goes into venture capital and particularly into university-backed research and development. And using the migration pathway for investor migrants seems like a pretty smart way to do it.
Fantastic. The Australian government have increased a $37.6 billion contribution, I'm reading here.
Yeah. So the big issue for Australian government is that migration itself is going to be under enormous pressure because, you know, people are just not migrating at the moment.
Mm.
The category of investor who or category of migrant who will continue to come are the investor migrants who will bring money. And so what we are proposing, what the government I think is quite keen to do, is see a lot of that investor migrant money go into regional Australia. And clearly, if it goes into regional Australia, we think universities are the best way to allocate
yes.
that capital out.
Fantastic. And look, I'm probably singing to the choir here. We have some very, very smart people in this country, don't we?
Well, we sure do.
Mm.
And it's actually not just in the big metropolitan areas. Some
okay.
of the greatest ideas that come out of Australia come out of regional Australia.
Beautiful. There it is. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for sharing, Guy. All the best to you and your team and your family. Stay safe in this time that we're living in, mate.
Fantastic. Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Adele Yan there with Guy Headley, his name is. He's Executive Chairman, Atlas Advisors Australia. And we're talking about the wealthy migrant investors could give struggling universities a lifeline. And it's about the ideas or concept that comes from university, from one individual, could be a uni student. And the university gets behind them. So let's seek now for an investor to invest in this concept, this idea. So look, great for the university, great for the student, great for investors. And as Guy alluded to, we're very smart people in this country, and they're not living in the cities. How deadly us, more bay in the country. Too deadly. Have you say, Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416. That's the number you need to call for National Talk Black. And Murray from the Curry here, Trevor Tim 20 Trev, taking you right through to 12 noon Queensland time. Add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416.
Gala yela do te yo Moraya yela que ta me con ella acababa na la mer gualenga mer gualenga Como le guiñe que mo Thank you.
four-letter word, love there. That's Benny Woodley here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Your mob can have your say. Call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Call the number yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Macquarie, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BB and Bummer, Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. And you can have your say, 1-800-422-416. We're going to catch up with the publisher editor of New Matilda. We've got Chris Ram on the line. CG, a very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trev. I'm a danger to shipping. That's how fit I am.
There you go. Fired up, my brother. Where are you based? You on the road? Where are you, my friend?
No, I'm still in Broken Hill.
Yes.
Out in the desert. Right. I was going to leave this week or next week, but it's been delayed again, so I'm still hanging out here. I'm trying to get back to Queensland, and I'll tell you what, the winter has kicked in here, which has made it even more motivating.
but you're doing good work there. Look, working with our mob there, and which is fantastic. That's what it's all about. New Matilda got some stories up there. You want to enlighten us what we're talking about there, please?
Oh, we've had a good couple of weeks. well, the story we broke yesterday, which everybody's talking about this morning, is ABC's fake anonymous youth worker, Gregory Andrews, has been promoted to be the High Commissioner to Ghana.
Hello.
We got a little tip-off from the reader. They put out a media release, which no one noticed, including me, on Friday, and somebody emailed me yesterday. And just,
well, it's ways of communicating with the public, but really don't want them to know, but here it is, and sneak it in there sort of thing, but you found it.
There's an old theory in media spin that if you want to get bad news out, you do it on a Friday afternoon or Melbourne Cup Day. And so they've chosen Friday afternoon to release a statement that essentially says the man who lied on national television and wept with his face blacked out and his voice digitised, that described how children in Mutajulu he tried to report all this violence against children in Mutajulu to police, but he withdrew those statements because he was being threatened by local Aboriginal people. He did that on Late Line in 2006, and
in 2020, he gets promoted.
Yeah, well, as most people would know, that didn't happen. But that story by ABC Late Line led directly to the Northern Territory intervention, a multi-billion-dollar government policy branded as racist by the United Nations. So,
yes.
He's been floating around ever since, and we've been pursuing him for years. You know, we give him a touch-up every now and then, but he was back in the public service a couple of years ago. He got moved to China as a diplomat. Now he is literally the High Commissioner to Ghana. So they put him in a country where a lot of black people are, so I imagine.
Exactly.
He'll get up to it. Well, who knows what he'll get up to, but... anyway, that story's up. We put it up yesterday.
Well, it's sort of like throwing him to the wolves, so to speak. You're going there.
Yeah. Look, I imagine if the good people of Ghana find out who the person from Australia is occupying that embassy, I don't think they'll be very happy. But so that story's been getting a big run overnight this morning. It's kind of stirred up a bit of a hornet's nest. But we also released a. Special investigation yesterday, which is the second one we released last week. A young writer called Warwick Jones has looked at Australia's...
Child inside, eh?
Yeah, but also how young we prosecute people. And in Australia, all states and territories prosecute children as young as 10. So he opens the story, opens the feature with a story about a 10-year-old Aboriginal girl in Geelong in 2015, who arrived at court wearing pigtails in her school uniform, charged with theft. And what she had done was get into someone's car to use their phone to ring her mother because she was a foster child. So the police charged her with theft. She went through numerous court dates. It dragged on for months. Her solicitor, a man named Ali Besaroglu, who's a Victorian solicitor, eventually managed to get the matter dismissed, but not without a great deal of trouble. So the feature kind of looks at that issue more broadly, and it makes the point that deaths in custody basically start with kids in custody, because the facts are overwhelming. When you jail children as young as 10, and there are over 1,000 children in Australia today who are under 14, I think, currently in jail.
Well, just getting out of the kimbies virtually, brother.
Yeah, look, the rate of affecting Aboriginal kids is obviously huge. It's exponentially higher for Aboriginal children. But the statistics are undeniable that when you jail children that young, the outcomes are far more likely to be poor moving forward. They're far more likely to reoffend. They're far more likely to be institutionalised, and they're far more likely to go on to live a life of of real tragedy. So the future kind of weighs into what we do in Australia, and it's basically trying to make the point that shock jocks and cops are the people who are pushing hardest for children as young as 10 to be charged. But internationally, Australia is one of the worst nations on earth for this. We jail 10-year-olds, but countries like Brazil and what have you, you've got to be 18 before you can be charged with a crime.
Well, for the officers to jail a child 10 years old, it must be in the laws, legislation as such, so they're doing their job, but it's legislation, isn't it?
Yeah, look, the science shows that children as young as 10, they know the difference between right and wrong, but they don't know the difference between criminality and non-criminality. And you can't charge a child with being a criminal if they don't really understand what criminality is. So, but you've got shock jocks and cops who just run this, law and order, be hard on kids. I mean, you're talking about jailing children. And a lot of countries around the world have well and truly moved away from this. Australia, unfortunately, is not one of them. The feature also makes the point. It touches on it, and we're going to come back to it in a future feature. But we re-looked at the jailing statistics for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia, and they are still, to this day, they're increasing, even though we've been talking about this for years.
Yes.
And they're still the most jailed people on earth. So Indigenous Australians are the most incarcerated people on earth.
Well, that sounds like a pandemic, doesn't it?
Well, it does. If you look at the situation in the US has the highest jailing rate on earth, with about 660 people per 100,000 head of population. They've got about 2.3 million prisoners in the US. The jailing rate of Indigenous people, of First Nations people in Perth, in WA, is 7 times higher than America.
Whoa.
So
that's sickening.
4,000 per 100,000 head of population. 1 in 20 First Nations people in Australia are in jail. So, First Nation males, sorry, are in jail. So
let's invest more money in building more prisons.
It is. And I tell you what, if you lock up kids, it costs about 5 times more to lock up a kid than an adult. So clearly our approach is not working, and it's also in breach of international law. But
People complain about how much money gets to black people, taxpayers' money. Well, there you go, putting more kids in prison, and it's 5 times more than an adult in prison. That's taxpayers' money, is it not?
It is. It costs $500,000 a year to keep a child in detention. $500,000 a year. You could give that family of that child that $500,000 a year and get them out of poverty.
Or prevention of crimes and empower the child about a slap on the wrist, but breaking it into a car and make a phone call with the mother, so they're looking at that child, you're going to be in 5 years' time raping people, stealing people, stealing things, killing people, so we'll put you in jail now.
Yeah, it's so illogical. It's hard to get your head around. I mean, you could give $500,000 to lock up a child for a year. You could give that family one-fifth of that and lift them out of poverty. $100,000 a year, you can live on $100,000 a year pretty well.
Yeah.
It's still only a third of what politicians earn, but you could live on that money and lift that family out of poverty. Instead, they jail those kids and spend $500,000 of taxpayers' money in the process.
It's
ludicrous.
Exactly. Okay, and all about also about propaganda, how Tony Abbott won Australia's highest honour for service to Indigenous communities. How's that sitting?
Yeah, look, I wrote this feature last week, and I've got a follow-up to it that's due out tomorrow. I'm up against it a bit, but I should get there. But basically, when Tony Abbott got kicked out of office, he obviously led the coup against Malcolm Turnbull, and as part of his reward for that was Scott Morrison made him the special envoy for Indigenous affairs. Now, that's the sort of, that's like the most improved banner at a school carnival. special envoy. But Abbott basically went on a 16-day tour of remote communities. He spent $97,000 of taxpayers' money on that tour, and he visited 16 remote communities, mostly Queensland, South Australia, and Western Australia, and Northern Territory. And he thanked those communities in a speech to Parliament and talked about how important school attendance was. So we thought, well, let's have a look at what these school attendance for those communities
Let's look at the real figures.
Yeah, well, we looked at the figures, and as it turns out, there were 30 school campuses in the communities that he went to. 26 of them have worse school attendance today than they did when Tony Abbott launched his remote school strategy in 2014. So they've spent $100 million of taxpayers' money, and they've made the situation demonstrably worse. And the thing that people need to know or need to bear in mind is people will say, well, that's the fault of those Aboriginal communities for not sending their kids to school. The truth is there are many, many reasons why these communities don't send their kids to school. And either you accept that all Aboriginal people in remote communities hate their children and don't want the best for them, or you have to accept that there is something very
wrong with the curriculum,
the school system.
Yes.
Otherwise, why would so many people walk away from it? And that is, you know, there is all sorts of reasons why school attendance is a challenge in remote communities. But whatever the case, the fact is, Tony Abbott's solutions are no solutions at all. The feature looks in depth at his history in Indigenous affairs. It talks about all sorts of failures that he's had. I mean, the Northern Territory intervention is a case in point. But it talks about the Opal fuel, which Abbott claimed to have rolled out in 2004, which eliminated petrol sniffing in remote communities. That is true. He did roll it out. It did mostly eliminate petrol sniffing. But what he doesn't tell you is that he opposed the rollout for almost a year.
Yes.
While they were returning $8 billion surpluses in the budget and had to spend about $26 million to eradicate petrol sniffing, they refused to do it. So the feature basically is just a... it just goes back and looks at Tony Abbott's history as the, quote, Prime Minister for Indigenous Affairs and questions why he subsequently got a Queen's Birthday Companion of the Order of Australia for services to Indigenous communities when clearly his policies made things worse.
Yeah. So, but getting rewarded, and we haven't even seen the end result. So you're getting rewarded for the work that hasn't been done yet.
Well, the end result, if you close it off today, the end result is that things are demonstrably worse. And that's undeniable. The figures we have quoted in this story are publicly available figures on school attendance collected through the My Schools website. And they're indisputable. I mean, all of the schools we looked at, of the 30 campuses, 26 of them have a worse result today than in 2014 when Abbott rolled out his remote school attendance strategy. And that strategy was about getting people basically to chase kids into school. Well, you can do that as much as you want, but if the parents of those children are not supportive of the school system, they're not going to send their kids to school. And there are many other reasons, of course, which we're exploring in the next feature, which is due out probably tomorrow. But, it's laughable. I mean, this guy does a kind of public victory lap about his time in government and the amazing things he did for Aboriginal people. He's made it
worse,
so much worse.
Yes,
and no one who works in Aboriginal affairs would refute that. Everybody knows it's exponentially worse today than it was when he got in.
And Chris, talking about the figures again, how much money was put towards that so-called project?
That's $100 million.
Yes.
In fact, in 2019, early last year, they announced another $47 million for the remote school attendance strategy, and that is after 5 years of it failing. And they've extended that policy now to 2022, to the start of 2022. So I don't know of any other area of government where you could waste $100 million of taxpayers' money over 6 years, make things clearly provably worse, and then add another $47 million to it and say, look what we're doing, it's great. There would be blood in the streets and politicians hanging from poles if any other area of government that occurred. But in Aboriginal affairs, they just go, oh, well, you know, whatever. And the media don't take the issue seriously, so they don't look into it. That's the real outrage of this story, is that it is so easy to obtain these figures. And it is so easy to prove that the policy is spectacularly wrong-headed and bad, but media don't. In fact, the day that we published that feature, The Age ran a story about a press release from Ken Wyatt talking about how they were doing well and they're looking at improving school retention rates for Year 12 students. You can keep all the kids at school to Year 12 that you want, but if you've only got half the population going to school,
yes.
So you know, it's fundamentally a story about very bad government policy and rank mainstream media laziness. They don't care that the policy's bad.
Well, if you look at black lives in custody, you know, and black deaths, what have you, and you talk about people have always, non-Indigenous people have said that we're wasting a lot of taxpayers' money, what have you, you know. But when you're talking government, about, government money, but when you're talking about that industry, that black money, it's a big industry, and a lot of people make a lot of money. If there's $100 million going into the kitty for nothing, dead-end street.
It is, and it's governments wasting it, not Aboriginal people.
Well, there you go. Let's get that right.
Governments wasting it. These are government policies that have not only failed, but are still failing and are still being expanded and rolled out.
Sure.
We've got more to come on this, and it's actually pretty shocking reading, but this is how ridiculous it's got, Trev. At the very end of the feature, I put an editor's note to say the remote school attendance strategy, we only looked at 30 campuses, the communities that Abbott toured on his special envoy tour. There are 84 schools around the country that the Commonwealth has included in the remote schools attendance strategy. Now, we've looked at the figures for those 84 schools, and I can tell you it's even worse than the 30 that we looked at in relation to Abbott. But we said,
so if you look at the other
story,
50, you'll see more money being lost.
It's worse. And we said at the end of the story, if there's any mainstream journalist reading this, do your frigging job.
Yes.
Here is a link to where you can find the data on the schools. Here is on the school attendance. Here is a link to find out what the schools are. We will give you a week to scoop us, and you can have this fantastic scoop. You've got a week. Well, it's now Monday. We've got to come out with a story tomorrow. No mainstream media are going to pick this up. None of them are going to report it. They're all going to just ignore the story. There's too much work. You know, you'd have to do like 5 or 6 hours' work to get the story done, or you could just take a press release from a government minister which says everything's good, type that up, and then go to the pub with your mates, which is what the mainstream media basically do. So.
Well, if you look at 100 million, imagine it now and what it can do in regarding the life we're living at the moment because of COVID-19 and where that money would be spent.
Look, it's a train wreck, and everybody knows it's a train wreck, but mainstream media don't care, and Labor's not screaming from the hilltops about this. Labor's not banging their fists on the desk and going, you're wasting money and making people's lives worse. They're saying nothing.
Yeah.
So, which is what they did last year when we revealed they gave $15 million to Wesfarmers, the owners of Coles, from the Aboriginal Affairs bucket of money.
Yeah.
So they're just, media just have disengaged from reporting Aboriginal Affairs in any serious way. The only stories they now do is the low-hanging fruit of some, when a video appears of a copper beating up some poor black fella, they'll run a story about that. But actually doing physical work and proper research-based journalism.
It's research, isn't it? A true journal will do the research and put the story on the table, so to speak, so all Australians can see, black or white, good or bad, but here it is, the story is the story, and it's true.
Yeah, that's their job, but, you know, why would they do that?
But you're just a white fellow living, working out there in Murray community, and so why should we listen to you?
Yeah, exactly.
My brother, good talking to you, Chris.
Pleasure as always.
Thanks for sharing. You travel safe and come home for the winter.
I will, mate.
All the best, brother.
All right.
Bye-bye. That's Chris Graham from New Matilda, the director, producer, publisher, editor of New Matilda. And you can check out newmatilda.com. And he tells how it is. And there it is. He say white on the outside, black on the inside. But he tells the true stories and what it is. So there it is, one of the stories about $100 million was given in regard to a project that Tony Abbott ran and about looking after our children and attendance in schools and what have you. And got a water for it, but fell flat on his face in regard to the outcome of the situation. So add to the conversation, tell us what your thoughts are on those topics or whatever topic you want to talk about here on National Talk Black. That deadly number here is 1-800-422. 0422 416. Yeah, with the Bully, I'm Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns. That's BBM and Bumber Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we've got Cross Nation, thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Too deadly.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7. I remember the day.
She wrote me a letter. She said,
on your mom, it's me, Bush Tucker Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran!
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Yeah, that chopping number again, 1-800-422-416. Call that number and have your saying yarn up strong. Otherwise, you can text a brother 045-714-0550 and our Facebook page as well, BBM987FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS and House at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns. Us, BBM Bummer, Brit Media, 98.7 FM. Voice to our people and voice for our people, and we yarn up strong. And a lot of yarns we have on First Nation radio stations aren't yarned on mainstream, but that's okay. We've got a fantastic vehicle here, a tool here, and we utilise them. Big shout out to all our First Nation radio stations across the country, a beautiful network, Black Deadly Network, and our yarns are strong and our music's are strong and all our storytelling as well. And hear it from a black side, so to speak, a black point of view. Yarn Up Strong here on your daily program, National Talk Black. I'm taking right through to 12 noon. That's Queensland time. It's 11:42 at the moment here in Queensland, so you've got about 18 minutes or so, 18 minutes to go, so add to the conversation. Have your saying, Yarn Up Strong. I believe we've got a call online. We've got Greg. Greg, good morning. How are you?
Trendy Trev, very, very well.
Good. Good to hear your voice, brother. How are you travelling? All good?
Yeah, good. We just came back from Cooktown.
Okay, rightio. What are you up there for?
We, a friend of ours up there, he needed a bit of a hand with some work on his solar.
Okay.
So we managed to get in on an essential service pass.
Yes.
And we just a bit north of Mount Carbine, they've got Checkpoint Charlie.
Yep. So did you check all that up before going up there, or did you get permission to go up beforehand? How'd that work?
Yeah, I got a letter off our mate to say that we were needed to help him. And then when we got to the checkpoint, the police there, they were great.
Good.
They were so helpful.
Good.
And anyway, we just quickly filled in the pass. There's an E pass and there's an R pass, and then you just fill out little JSA and
all your particulars. And if COVID-19 was to come through there, then they can get in touch with you and suss out your situation. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. There's quite a few people going in for the same reasons, all sorts of different stuff. So so that was great. And beautiful place. Never been there before, but a really, really nice place.
Good.
Stayed at the River of Gold Motel, and they, Mick and Lee, looked after us really well.
Big shout out, Mick and Lee, fantastic.
Yeah. So we were sitting on the deck watching sunsets over the Endeavour River.
Did you fix the solar? Did you end up fixing the solar?
Yeah. So we got all the details there. We got to go back again with some bits and pieces. So that was really good.
Fantastic. So good to get out of the house, eh, and go for a drive and doing everything by the book in regard to restrictions and what have you, and getting the AOK and sign the papers and continue with work, but just to get outside the four walls, eh, mate?
And then coming back, you know, we thought, oh, we'll have to get stopped again. They just opened up the boom gate, let us through.
Yeah, too easy. Yep.
So it was. It was amazing.
Good, fantastic. But restrictions are still in place with certain places, and we can't be too careful in regard to the virus. It's still with us, and no vaccine for the virus.
Yeah, well, that's why it's all in place. You know, like you said, they know everybody that's going through, when they're going through, so if anything was to happen, they can track it back. And no worries. The other thing I wanted to say, we went on when we came back, we ended up going to Mr. Soy Boy.
Mr. Soy Boy?
And, had dinner there at his restaurant there at Mulgrave Road, Ishmael Road.
Yes.
And, excuse me, once again, we've got some Aboriginal fellas who are still laying on the streets and underneath the covers of the shop fronts and that. And what I'm suggesting is that there's a park just around the corner. Why couldn't they have the park, you know, put in a shed and, you know, some facilities?
Well, they rest where they feel comfortable, my brother.
Yeah, well, it gets them out from under. It'd be much more comfortable in the park with a bit of accommodation, you know, like I say, a shed. If they want to sleep out, you know, give them, I don't know, fire pit or however it is, how they want to live there. And it's a beautiful little park. It'll be there.
Yeah. Hear what you're saying, my brother. Hear what you're saying. And like I said, they're comfortable where they are, and it doesn't look good for businesses as such, you know, and that's their people and their land. They feel as though, well, this is it, and unless asked to move on. If they're not asked to move on.
The real drawback with it, Trev, is that they do have some drinks, and then they get rowdy between themselves, and they start cursing and swearing and carrying on, and it's like, right in front of a business. Come on now.
Yep.
We can do better than that. As a community.
Sure we can. As a community. That's right. We can.
Yeah.
And until authorities move them on, well, it is what it is. And they feel that, well, they got a right to be there.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I don't know who we'd talk to about that because you got there's plenty of ground in Cairns.
Sure.
You
know, has the restaurant itself made any phone calls with authorities?
Yeah, well, we did make some phone calls when we were there. Because.
And what about the restaurant owners?
Yeah, they're doing that too. And the response from the police, et cetera, they're not interested. They didn't even turn up.
Yep. Outside so that, they're not really harming anybody, are they?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, when we rang the police and said, listen, what can we do with this? And the guy on the phone said, get away from all that noise. And it's all, hang on a second, the noise is here.
That's what you complained about. Why are you ringing?
Yeah, he could hear it. Mm. You know, these guys are going off at each other. You know, the last time we were there, ambulance and the police came to help out a fellow that got beat up. You know, it's like, that's not right, you know.
But they didn't act on after the phone call, did they?
Not this one.
Yeah.
No.
There it is. So no, my mob got a right to be there then. They're relaxing there. They're feeling safe there, feeling comfortable there. And until authorities move them on.
Yeah, it's a shame, you know.
Oh, well, you're making this point on radio anyway, so hopefully authorities will pick it up. Yeah, hopefully move on, like you said, to the park.
Maybe next time when you talk to the boys down in Edmonton, see if they've got any suggestions.
Sure. It's out of their precinct, I believe, but we'll have that conversation.
Yeah, well, they can, you know, talk it up to Cairns or something, I don't know. But, it's not good for their look. It's not good for the, you know.
And the restaurants and the residents in the area. Know, good point.
We are a tourist town.
Yep. Made your point that my brother will have a yarn at Edmonton Police when we yarn with him on which way yarning. Later this week, brother. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, good on you, Trev.
Thanks, Greg. You take care, mate.
Well, all right. Good on
Greg calling from West Cairns, having his say, Yarn Up Strong, talking about his trip up north and regarding restrictions as well. Like I said, there are restrictions across this state here in Queensland. Now I know that the Premier, Anna Palaszczuk, has not opened up the borders just yet. A lot of business owners are getting frustrated with that, and especially tourism, which is a big industry in the state, the Sunshine State. But that is the law at the moment. And COVID-19 public service announcement stage 2 roadmap easing access restrictions for remote communities is the information I've got here at the moment. Queensland has reached stage 2 of the roadmap for remote communities. Stage 2 makes it easier for a mob to move about with declared travel zones now approved by Queensland Chief Head Officer. Restrictions will still apply for tourists and essential workers. And so that sort of bit of information is coming through regarding COVID-19 in the state of Queensland. Have you say, Mob Yarn Up Strong, it's 11:50, 10 minutes go here on National Talk Black. Want to hear what you've got to say, give me a call, 1-800-422-416.
The creation of the land is something we don't quite understand. The eagle soars, a dreaming began. The rainbow serpent came from underground. And all they ever want to do is share. Get down, get down. A couple hundred years ago or so, a white dude came and landed on the shore. The first of those that could not understand how these different people love the land. Shake a leg.
shake a leg there, Adrian Thomas, here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Call on live, we've got Brother Selwyn. Very good morning, my brother.
Good morning, your brother. Yeah, brother, make it tomorrow. I want to center my call around Greg, but thank you, Greg. The Clot of Black Fellows think the same thing, you know, brother. Mm. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
The Clot of Black Fellows think the same way. But anyway, brother, one time ago, the town, they blamed the Black Fellows, but it's dead. Nothing to do with Black Fellows, brother.
Yes.
Is that electric? Brother, you know, like, Warren, he comes on, and sometimes he might say, all these white fellows that come on the show. But brother, I love Chris William. I love Tony too, brother, Tony Gibbs.
Yeah,
brother.
Sure. Beautiful, eh? Good yarns, eh?
Yeah, that Negro fellow that grew up in Cairns with Black fellow, I love him too, brother. And same by Greg, he contributes to the program too, brother.
But like all callers, brother. All callers, yes.
Yeah, Chris, yeah, that's right, and it's up to us to have this conversation.
Yeah.
That's what this program is.
Whether we agree or disagree, but good to have the conversations.
Gives us a voice. And brother, on that, when Maureen comes up, you know, the three papers, combine, the West Cape Bulletin, the Taurus News, and Cooktown News.
Yeah.
They're separate, but in each of them, he never missed to have his say, Warren H. But anyway, you know, like they talk about choices, deadly choices, but what if it's the only choice that you could hear? Like I said on the Cairns Post, when I read it today, quoting the Minister for Promotion, and all you're hearing is his voice all the time. And I tell you, it's a breath of fresh air. It's like a good fart, brother. It's fresh, fresh as a fart.
Nice description, my brother. Nice description.
Yeah. And anyway, brother, on that other one about the locking up the little fellas, and again, I'll say, there's no racism in me in Australia, but George Pell didn't get jail and then bloody off that word.
Yeah.
Financial institution, the bank will be fine. Well, serious crime, brother. Mm. Yeah, they never get jail, but a little one does, brother. Thank you very much, brother.
Thank you, my brother. Too deadly. That's Brother Selwyn there having his say here on your deadly program, National Talk Black. 6 minutes ago on the program, squeezing a call, squeezing a yarn, and we're taking it right through the 12 noon with the news coming up here very soon. Here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Coming home, I need a little company. I don't want to be alone. I took a look around that velvet sea of red. I take my pick tonight instead of my ex in bed. So much for loyalty, no cure from a bottle of rum. The circle of our love come undone. Forget about the past and judgments that were made. Tonight I'm gonna call a spade a head full of trouble, a line drawn in the sand. Pushing the boundaries, I'm in over my head. My own worst enemy, I'm living without care. A broken heart on the mend.
Yeah, I hope you are too. My own best friend is named that daily track there. Adam James featuring Kevin Bennett here on daily program National Talk Black. Going to catch up now with Brother Sam back on the line. Sam, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Trev. How are you this morning?
I'm fantastic, my brother. All good. We've got the third coming up for your march happening here in Cairns. Elaborate on that, please, my brother.
Yeah, just a big shout out to all the families. You know, we've invited them along on Friday. We're highlighting all the issues that everybody in your program has been talking about.
Good, yes.
Putting them back on the agenda. But I'll just a quick one. I've just come from Warren Inch's office. So I'm going in, I'm looking for a box of constitutions. As a constituent, I'm only allowed to get one. I can't get a box to hand out to the people on Friday, but I'll be... I took one.
So the constituents of this country can't have a constitution. You can only receive one as an individual. You can't get a box to hand out to people.
No, I couldn't. You know, so.
That's the rule, is it?
That's the rule, you know. It's just like the flag. I couldn't get a flag off them because I'm a non-for-profit organisation. I don't, and without a flagpole, well, Tape Your Grassroots is a non-profit organisation, and but they were happy to give them out for the Black Lives. No, well, good to them, you know, but they're a bunch of hypocrites, you know. They give it out for that thing, but you know, we're local traditional owners.
Yeah, but as black fellas, we're used to red tapes and brick walls, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm going to go and buy one, they said.
Is that right, brother?
That's what they told me.
Get a receipt. You may have to claim it back on reimbursement.
Yeah, I'll probably be able to get it back on my tax, eh?
So you got the march. Tell us about the march happening on Friday, brother.
Yeah, brother, we've got some good... We've got some best speakers, Artie Gray, Smallwood,
yes.
Yama, Michelangelo. Yeah, I'm going to say something. I'm carrying on from my mother, Dr. Evelyn Scott.
Yes.
We've got a couple of young people speaking... so we got a representative from Torres Strait community because we all won, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the white elephant in the room, we're all talking about safety in regarding COVID-19?
We've got, you know, we'll be adhering to all the rules of COVID.
Good.
There's a social distancing. The actual police, cultural liaison officers are providing us with a face mask.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's very good of them. Yeah, so,
but, and a peaceful movement at that, isn't it, brother?
Peaceful.
Yes.
Peaceful. And we're going to have 1 second for one life. So people got to get ready. 1 second for one life. Yeah.
Yep, 437 lives.
Yeah, 437 seconds. And we're going to have a smoke and ceremony going on while that's happening.
All
and
right.
People got to be scared. Because it only took that 1 second to extinguish that light.
Exactly, brother. Exactly. And they went 1 second too far, didn't they, brother?
That's it.
Yeah. And they were all meeting at the skate park in front of the Cairns Base Hospital and the march down the Esplanade to Fogarty Park. Is that right?
Yes. And the Esplanade, we're on the street when the Esplanade's getting closed off.
Okay.
We'll be stopping at every corner to have a performance by our mob.
Yes.
And, you know, obviously have to say a few words because we want to highlight a few issues going on in town there with some, you know, rich people with deep pockets and lawyers that are living off them to fight us for our land, you know?
Sure. Okay, brother. Now, what time are we meeting? What time's the kickoff for the march?
Well, the march kicks off at 9 o'clock, but, you know, you like people there, 8, you know, 8. From 8 o'clock onwards, so we can inform them, give them the COVID stuff.
Okay, my brother. I'll go to the news, my brother Sam. Thanks, Sam. Sam Bacco.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns.
Stay black,
you're tuned
stay
in to National
stay
Talk
strong.
Black with Trendy Trek.
1-800-422-416.
I feel so disheartened, 'cause I've lost my way. There's just one.